This time of the year between Christmas and Lent is a funny little few weeks. We know how to do Christmas, the carols, the candles, the decorations, and we know how to do Lent. But the half a dozen weeks or so after the Epiphany are kind of a no man's land. Jason put it best to me a couple weeks ago when he described it as a kind of grab bag. A little bit of this, a little bit of that. And today we bring the season of grab bag time to a close as we celebrate the Feast of the Transfiguration. One day, seemingly out of nowhere, Mark says that Jesus took Peter, James, and John and led them up a high mountain apart by themselves, and he was transfigured before them. His clothes became dazzlingly white. A voice from heaven says, "This is my son, the beloved, listen to him." Jesus, who was so coy about who he is suddenly revealed to be the Son of God. And even then, on the way down the mountain, Jesus tells the disciples not to tell anyone else about what just happened. Just as a note here, don't get thrown off by the word transfiguration. Transfiguration just means that Jesus' appearance is transformed. So don't get confused by transfiguration. There's plenty of other stuff in the story to get confused by. For starters, what's all this stuff about the clothes becoming white? What are Moses and Elijah doing there? And most perplexing of all, why does Jesus tell the disciples not to tell anyone else about what just happened? Isn't the whole point to tell other people about Jesus? And yet, while this moment feels strange, it also feels familiar, because it feels a little bit like Easter. Jesus appearing to the disciples, the blinding light, the vision disappearing as quickly as it came. If you look up paintings of the Transfiguration, you'll notice they look an awful lot like paintings of the Resurrection. And even our worship today feels a little bit like Easter. We put on our best Easter whites and belt out our Alleluias, a kind of liturgical Shrove Tuesday. And if today's story feels a little bit like Easter to you, that's because it is. The reason why this story feels so jarring, like it comes out of nowhere, is that it is an Easter story. A story of one of Jesus' resurrection appearances that Mark decided to plop down right smack dab in the middle of his gospel. And if that's true, then the obvious question is why? Why would you take a resurrection appearance from the end of the gospel and put it in the middle? One explanation is that Mark lost track of it at some point, misplaced it, didn't proofread carefully enough, and voila, here it is. It seems unlikely. Remember, Mark's gospel is written as a circle. Gordon Lathrop, whose book we'll be reading this Lent, puts it this way. In Mark, there is no resurrection appearance because the entire gospel is a resurrection appearance. Mark drops an Easter story in the middle of the gospel because he wants to tell us something important about who Jesus is and what it means for Jesus to suffer and what it means for Jesus to be glorified. And since in the Lutheran tradition we celebrate Transfiguration the last Sunday before Lent, it offers us a chance to pause and consider what it is we're going to be doing over the next month and a half. How should we approach the season of Lent that leads us to Jesus' death and resurrection? One of the most common ways we try to make sense out of Lent and Holy Week is by trying to reenact it. Sometimes we do this physically. We do passion plays, we do processions of the cross, we wave palm branches. But most often we do this in our heads. To say that if you really want to understand the power of the Easter story, you need to experience it like the people in the Gospels do. That if you know how the story ends, you'll ruin it. So take Easter and just bracket it out of your mind for the next 40 days, and don't ruin the surprise for anybody else. This is not how Mark views Jesus' death and resurrection at all. And this is precisely why Mark takes this Easter story and sticks it in the middle of his gospel. Because Mark doesn't want us to have to pretend. We pretend in all kinds of different ways, and most of the ways we pretend are trivial and harmless. But some of them are more troubling. One of the most common ways we pretend is by acting like death doesn't actually scare us all that much, and pretending that we can avoid dealing with death entirely. A couple of weeks ago, The Times published an essay by a woman named Kate Bowler who has stage 4 cancer. There's no cure for her cancer, so the best she can hope for is what's called a durable remission. But most of the essay isn't actually about Bowler, it's about the people she meets who are so uncomfortable dealing with her. Some of them are teachers who say there must be some kind of lesson in her cancer. Others are problem solvers who try to solve her unsolvable problem. And among the worst are the ones Bowler calls minimizers. She writes, "Some people minimize spiritually by reminding me that cosmically, death isn't the ultimate end. It doesn't matter in the end whether we are here or there. It's all the same," said a woman in the prime of her youth. She emailed me this message with a lot of praying hand emoticons. "I am a professor at a Christian seminary, so many Christians like to remind me that heaven is my true home, which makes me want to ask them if they would like to go home before me. Maybe right now." That's an extreme example, but you can see this kind of thinking all around us. You see it in how we have fewer funerals and memorial services and more celebrations of life. There's nothing wrong with celebrating someone's life, obviously, but you have to wonder if we're really just trying to keep death at arm's length. We say we want to celebrate someone's life because we don't want to actually grieve their death. You see that in how we talk about death. People don't die, they just move on. They don't die, they just pass away. Ways of talking about death without actually talking about it. But when we confess the Apostles' Creed in a few minutes, you'll notice it doesn't say that Jesus suffered, moved on, and was buried. We might think that pretending we can avoid death is some kind of recent phenomenon, but it's as old as the scriptures. The transfiguration is God's response to our pretending that we don't have to deal with death honestly. Right before the transfiguration, there's this great little scene where Peter tells Jesus that he's the Messiah, the one they'd all been waiting for. And Jesus responds by telling Peter that since he's the Messiah, he'd be killed and raised from the dead 3 days later. And when Peter hears this, all he can hear is "be killed." And Peter thinks, well, this isn't the kind of Messiah that I want at all. What use is a Messiah who suffers? I want a Messiah of glory. And so Peter takes Jesus aside and tells him that he can't get himself killed. If Jesus' mission is going to get him killed, then it's time to find a new mission. Peter's fear of death is so overwhelming, he doesn't hear the second half of what Jesus said. "I will be killed and raised from the dead 3 days later." And even while they're on the mountain during the transfiguration, this is still what Peter wants. When Jesus is transformed, he says, "Rabbi, this is good. Whatever is going on here, this is the kind of Messiah that I want. Not a Messiah who dies, not a Messiah who suffers. I want a Messiah revealed in glory. So let's make three dwellings, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah. And whenever we want to have a religious experience, we can get away from the world and go to this mountain and have our time with God." What Peter wants, what most of us want deep down, is a way to get to Easter without having to go through Good Friday. To be able to get to the resurrection without speaking honestly about suffering and death. The whole point of the transfiguration, the whole point of Mark's gospel, is to create faith. To create faith in us so we wouldn't have to live like Peter, so constrained by his fear. While so many of us think that we can't experience Lent and Easter unless we step into Peter's shoes, Mark is saying the exact opposite. That Lent and Easter exist so that we would never have to view suffering the way Peter did. As final, as irredeemable, as beyond God's embrace. Mark puts the story here so that you won't have to pretend. So that you won't have to be so afraid of death that you minimize it out of your life. Mark puts the story here because he wants you to know that the one who will be crucified is the one who is alive and living among us. And the one who's raised from the dead is the same one who was raised on the cross. A crucifixion without a resurrection is pedestrian. It's not even worth mentioning. And a resurrection without a crucifixion is impossible. You notice that Jesus has little patience for Peter's idea to build shrines for him on the mountain. Instead, Jesus leads Peter and the disciples down the mountain toward Jerusalem, down the mountain toward the cross. Jesus is revealed to be the Son of God so that Peter and the disciples have the courage to follow him down the mountain to Jerusalem and the cross. What's been transfigured or transformed in the story isn't just Jesus. It's Peter, James, and John too. And with them, all of us. all of us who are being led toward the cross, but also toward the resurrection, being led to see how Christ doesn't undo death, but transforms death into life, and how the cross, the very instrument of death, will be transformed into the tree of life. Amen.